afternoon, listeners. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. It is about 3 p.m. your time. Hopefully you are making your way through the Seattle traffic here on the local radio. Also want to welcome our listeners via podcast from excellentcultures.com. I'm Zach Gander, your host. Got Steve Gander here. How's it going, Steve?
It's going great. It's going great. We've gotten to the point in Seattle where we actually enjoy the rain until it stops.
I don't know about you. Who are you? What are you? What?
The locals will tell you that if you can't see, or you can, if you can see Mount Rainier, it means it's going to rain. If you can't see Mount Rainier, it means it's raining already.
I don't know. It's part of being a Seattleite prerequisite that you have to complain about the weather.
That's what we do. You have to like coffee, complain about the weather, and be willing to put your tank top and shorts on whenever it hits 60 degrees.
Yeah, there you go. I live in Capitol Hill, Seattle, which is the most densely populated area in all Seattle. And if it hits 50 degrees and the sun's out, the park across the street has topless people all over it, laying face up at the sun.
Most of them are guys, right?
Yeah, most of them are. They're all guys. All they're right. All guys. They're
that's
all
good.
Guys.
That's
the
good
the
pre-
police
that's
precincts good two
yeah.
blocks
that's
away.
That's good
so.
To hear. We were going to have to buy you some blinders and yeah. talk to your wife about this.
Well, it was funny because yesterday I was at the doctor and just getting a checkup, and she goes, yeah, it looks like you're a little low on your vitamin D. And I'm like, I'm a little low on my vitamin D? Isn't that everybody in Seattle? Everybody's low on vitamin D.
So you get vitamin D from beer, right?
No. If that was the case, I'd have plenty of vitamin D. No, not from coffee. Vitamin D comes from the sun or in pill form. They can't prescribe it in pill form.
And the sun's better than pills, right?
Yeah, apparently. Apparently, honeycomb cereal is also high in vitamin
D. I'll take the honeycomb cereal. Honeycomb cereal and a beer. That'll
do it. Oh, man. Well, we're excited about today's show. We have a great guest with us. Steve, why don't you go ahead and introduce him?
So I've known Scott Arvis for a few years now, and Scott is a CEO of a firm called Transport America. I mean, these guys are the best of the best as far as we're concerned in over-the-road transportation of truckloads of materials. When you find out more about what Scott does and his company and his leadership style, you know, you're going to be seeing over-the-road trucks with their logo on at every place because they're doing a wonderful job of doing exceedingly well in an industry that has just been very hard hit by the economic trends, and they figured out a way to make growth happen when everything's going down. And it's leaders like Scott that we know can share the greatest insights with our listeners. So that's why we're having Scott on the air to talk to you guys today.
Absolutely. And listeners, you've been listening to us long enough that you know and understand that despite whatever area that our C-suite leaders are in, there's some good information coming out here and some good helpful thoughts coming out for you leaders. So, Scott, welcome to the show. We're excited you're here.
Oh, thank you, Zach. It's a pleasure to spend some time with you. And as always, it's always good to get together with Steve. I've worked with Steve, as he mentioned, for a number of years.
Well, Scott, your experience as a leader has really amazed and impressed me. You know, when I first met you, you were working with a really large company, and I was so impressed by your courage in making the transition from, you know, a great position in a great company to a much better position in a company that wasn't nearly as great then as it is now, and what you've been able to do with your team and your leaders in a very significant way. I mean, tell our listeners about Transport America. Tell them about what you guys do, what you're known for, what's unique about what you've done, and a little bit about, you know, your history and, you know, what's happened in the last few years that you've been at the helm there in a very significant transportation organization.
Yeah, I'd be glad to, Steve. First of all, the two of you ought to be ashamed of yourself for complaining about weather and then getting a guy who lives in Minneapolis where we just got a foot of snow yesterday and you're complaining about weather. So
we should be thankful for the rain.
That is true. I've been to Minneapolis, and I am a big baseball fan.
Did you go to Minneapolis or Minneapolis?
I don't know. Whatever you guys call it over there. Wherever the big mall is, right? What's that? The Mall of America.
Mall of America.
The I was disappointed. It's basically one giant mall with six versions of the same stores. You just keep going. You're like, hey, there's that store again. No, it was actually very
well,
cool.
It's exciting to folks who are coming out of the snow to go shopping.
No, absolutely. Well, I was disappointed, though, because I'm a big baseball fan, like I was saying. I went to see where the Twins play, and there was snow everywhere on the ground. I couldn't get in, but I was able to get into the gift shop and grab some Twins memorabilia, so...
Well, it's a beautiful place. The summer in July is great. Unfortunately, it begins and ends in July.
So tell us about Transport America, Scott.
Yeah. I joined Transport America 6 years ago. As Steve mentioned, I had worked for a much larger company. I had worked with Steve in the Excellent Cultures Group in my old company. Had left and joined Transport America. And Transport America was a company like a lot that you see in America, founded in 1984. The owner ran the business very successfully for a number of years. Then the organization got to a size where maybe his leadership style didn't fit as well. Very top-down organization, which is fine when you're smaller, you know, as long as the owner lives forever and is right most of the time. Unfortunately, the owner passed away in 2000. And the company went through about a 5 or 6 year period in time where they shrunk about 40%, basically went from making a small margin to a break even to losing a little bit of money. It was a public company that was moved private in 2006. And the private equity folks that bought Transport America brought me in about 3 months later. The organization was a good organization that had really kind of struggled, you know, after the passing of a very strong top-down leader. And so the challenge was, you know, how do you right a ship where the organization was in a little bit of a death spiral? And so, you know, over the course of the last 6 years, we've been able to grow the business, getting back all of the volume, the 40% that we lost. And so the organization is growing and growing strongly again. From an earnings perspective, we've taken the organization from basically a break-even position to making about 7% margins, which in the trucking industry is moving it from a bottom quartile performer to something, you know, not world-class yet, but in the upper third, with certainly some room to continue to move. You know, what I'm really proud of are some of the other non earnings related results as well. We've built a very deep talented team. We've gone to an organization largely now where we're promoting people from within. I know we'll talk in this broadcast a lot about the cultural transformation that we've been able to achieve. And that's shown up also, for example, in areas like we were voted last year the best truckload provider in North America by a poll that's done by Logistics Magazine. They poll about 5,000 logistics professionals, and we were rated the best of the best. So
that's awesome.
We're very proud of those results. And you know, as you guys know, it's done through changing the culture of an organization, and it's done through you know, hiring, retaining, promoting, you know, developing and motivating great people. And we feel we've done that here. So very proud of the organization, the things that we've been able to achieve, and it's still a work in progress, and we're still in the midst of that cultural transformation.
Well, Scott, one of the things, you know, that, as I mentioned earlier, impressed me so much about you as a leader is just, I mean, the leap of faith that, you know, you took moving from a senior management position in a, you know, at that time, very much larger, you know, organization that you'd worked with for years. And, you know, taking the helm of a at that time smaller firm and doing it, you know, everybody who's been in business knows if you're owned by private equity, you've got to be able to, you know, create returns on the investment of the shareholders or you're not going to be around for very long.
Right.
And, you know, the way, you know, we're going to want to hear from, you know, you about some of the strategies and things that you implemented to essentially, you know, engage a group of leaders who many, in fact, a huge number of those that were there when you first got started are still with you, turn things in a positive direction totally around and make a huge difference to the extent that now you're being recognized as best in the industry, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's been a challenging, but it's certainly been very fun and rewarding. As you mentioned, I spent 27 years in one organization, and the culture of that organization moved a little bit, but it was a great culture and still a very great great company. But I thought it had kind of drifted, at least from the direction culturally that I wanted to take an organization. So when we came to Transport America, what we found was a very top-down organization. As I mentioned, the owner had started the company from one truck, had grown it very, very significantly, and then, had wanted to run an organization where he controlled most, if not all, of the decision-making. That's great in a small company. Unfortunately, though, what happens is when that owner passed, there weren't people that were empowered to make decisions. They were used to looking up and having the owner make decisions. And so what you had is an organization, and I think over time people who stay in top-down organizations, it scares away some of the bright, talented people who want to make decisions. And what's left are good people, but people that are motivated more by comfort.
Yeah, and right. Being told what to do instead of deciding what to do.
Exactly. And so, what we found is some people who, the best way I could describe it, Steve, is they were very comfortable sitting in the stands watching some of the senior leadership play the game. And as part of sitting in the stands, they could critique performance, but they didn't have skin in the game. And so they stayed largely because it was a fun place to work, or I liked my boss, or there were good people, but the expectations were low. And it wasn't a high performance or a high achievement culture. And so the biggest challenge was, when you have good people who haven't seen that culture before, how do you get them excited, enthused, and involved in wanting to make a difference when they've been used to sitting in the stands?
We're going to take a break, and we're going to come right back, Scott, and want you to share those secrets that helped to get you and those people to that place. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNT Cultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
And you're back with Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We are on the line right now with a wonderful C-suite leader from Transport America. Steve, lead us into that conversation that you guys were just having in regards, actually Scott was filling us in, on transitioning Transport in America from a top-down organization to...
Yeah, well, Scott, what I heard you say was that basically the bottom line of this transformation was from a top-down organization that was losing, and now Scott Arvis shows up, and we're not only a top-down organization that's losing, we're an organization full of empowered people, and so successful that we've been named by our peers as best in the industry. Now, who doesn't want to learn how to make a success like that happen in any organization? Tell us some more about how you were able to engage, as you've, you know, described to us, a group of good people, but those who are used to sitting in the stands instead of, you know, taking the ball and running with it.
Steve, I think, you know, the keys would include making sure, number one, that you have the right leadership team that really is willing to hire great people, willing to train them, willing to allow them to take risk and occasionally fail, you know, willing to stretch them, willing to give them opportunities and move them. And then, you know, a willingness also, to hold those folks accountable for results. And those things sound like mom and pop, you know, mom and apple pie, I'm sure, to a number of your leaders. But when you have an organization where people are comfortable sitting on the sidelines and now all of a sudden you're asking them to get in the game, some people really, really respond well to that. Yeah. And others, in particular, maybe some senior leaders to some extent, said they wanted to see that happen, but when push came to shove, they didn't. And so, you know, what started was making sure you had the right senior leadership team that believed in that vision, and then continue to hire, empower, train, and develop people. And to me, one of the best examples, shortly after I joined, we had a position that was open for a senior operational leader. And the senior operational leader in our company manages all of our drivers. We looked internally. We didn't think we had anybody qualified. We brought somebody in from the outside. That person did a pretty good job over a couple of years. His wife, unfortunately, wanted to relocate back to where she lived. We reposted that position internally. We had five acceptable candidates.
Wow.
So the biggest problem we had 2 years later was which one of the five to choose. And that really speaks to, you know, giving people opportunities and allowing them, you know, through failures in some cases, but allowing them to succeed. And that's really been a major, major key to changing the organization and the culture of that organization.
Well, as I recall, Scott, I mean, it wasn't a high percentage of leaders that, you know, you turned over to get to the ideal team. And, you know, what you just shared about all of a sudden you've got all these qualified candidates who are ready, willing, and able says more to, you know, how you led, how your team led, and what processes you put in place to develop, train, and transform people as opposed to just bring a whole bunch of new folks in from the outside and start all over again.
Right, right. You know, it really was a mixture. We did have to bring in a few people. There were some senior leaders who, yeah, they talked a good empowerment game, but at the end of the day, they wanted to be the smartest person in the room. They wanted to make all the decisions, and they wanted to surround themselves with people who looked up and let them make decisions. And, you know, we struggled with a few of those people, but it was not the majority of the employees there. So largely it was just modeling and giving people a picture of a different culture. And I know one of the things you and I have talked about for the 8 or 9 years we've worked together is, you know, if you can create a picture of a culture and what it looks like, and you bring in role models and mentors and coaches, a lot of people haven't seen a picture of what a great culture looks like. And so we spent a lot of time using some of the tools that you provide, but also bringing in people who could coach, teach, and be role models for the type of culture we wanted to create to give, you know, people a picture of what we were looking for.
Well, I think you said it almost all the way when you said that you were looking for people who wanted others to make decisions instead of being the smartest person in the room. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, we're going to quote you on that one and tweet it out to folks, because leaders who and typically, as you already know, leaders who have the idea of wanting to be the smartest in the room don't come to work every morning with a goal to want to act like the smartest person in the room. It's a subconscious thing that people slip into and they don't realize it's going on. And some folks, you know, can live there for a lifetime and then wonder why they can't grow past a certain level in their organization and why they think they have empowered people, empowered leaders, but really don't, and why they think that their culture is about robust dialogue and interaction, and it's really about robust monologue where everybody is used to sitting around and being told what to do, and the boss is used to telling everybody what to do. So even when the boss decides that they're going to stop telling everybody what to do, nobody says anything, so the boss ends up telling everybody what to do again.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, one of the great benefits early in my career is I managed mechanics, and we have an extensive toolbox at our house. My wife makes good use of it. I'm horrible from a mechanic aptitude.
Sounds like your wife's the empowered mechanic in the family.
Exactly. And so, you know, what I found early in my career is there was nothing I could do to help a mechanic do his job better in terms of the technical aspects of the job. I wasn't going to be able to teach him how to do a brake job or rebuild an engine better. What I could do, though, is create a better work environment, you know, create a culture that allowed him to succeed, look for opportunities to tear down barriers, look for opportunities to, you know, make it a better place to work. But that was really the value I could create. It wasn't figuring out for the mechanic how he could do his job better. It was creating an environment to allow him to do his job better. And I tried to take those lessons and apply it to, you know, other areas of business now that I've been fortunate to move in an organization, you know, across a number of other different roles. But I'm always mindful of the fact that, you know, it's more our role as a senior leader to create an environment to allow people to succeed than to come up with all the answers for them.
Yeah, that's so huge. And what I've recognized in your style, Scott, as you've been able to do this and pull this off, it's you never really know where you're gonna go or what you're gonna do, but as long as your mindset and your philosophy is about creating this better environment that actually stimulates empowerment and engagement and breakthrough thinking as opposed to kind of staying the same, that's what makes the difference. And so many of our clients, we've been at this for 35 years, as you know, almost 36 now. And our processes are always, we have shows like this to listen to leaders like you so that we can get better, our processes can improve, and we can do a better job of serving our clients. And we're always about changing and improving and taking it to the next level. But I can't tell you how many even clients who we've served over the years and have had huge breakthrough successes and, you know, huge returns on their investments in making culture changes and empowering people, you know, even get stuck on the tools of wanting to use the same tools that they used 6 years ago just because they were comfortable, when there's a lot better tools now and newer tools, but folks just seem to want to go back to what's familiar.
Sure. That's very true. One of the things that can quickly destroy an empowering culture, you know, as we've talked about it, is, you know, my experience has been, and I have to be very mindful of that, it can very quickly, the culture you want, be destroyed at the top because, you know, most of us progress in organizations because of our smarts, because of our competitive nature. We're good at solving problems. Those aren't necessarily great attributes for creating a culture of empowerment.
Right.
And so, you know, I have to watch because I continually get dragged into meetings where there are problems it's very easy for me to just, you know, spout off a solution. And I have to catch myself from doing that because, you know, sometimes the worst thing you can do is try to solve people's problems. You start reading your press clippings about how good you are and you forgot how you got there.
Yeah, exactly. My wife poked me today, and she does this frequently, with something like, if you would just go to work on practicing what you're putting out on social media and talking about on your radio shows and teaching your clients with your own kids and your own family, you'd be a whole lot more effective and successful than you are. So, Scott, when we get back from the break, we're going to want you to talk to us about, you know, what do you do with yourself to hold back from solving all the problems and engaging people to do it?
Yeah, great segue. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180. We'll be right back.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at ExcellentCultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
And we're back with Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180. We have Scott Arvis, CEO of Transport America, as we're wrapping up that last segment. It reminded me, Scott, that you sent with us your StrengthsFinder strengths.
Yes.
So I'm going to air your laundry to all of our listeners right now.
And if that's nice of you, Zach.
Nah, I'm excited about it.
It's clean laundry. You didn't find any dirty stuff.
Well, yet. You know, it's clean laundry, but also like we just ended the last segment, our strengths often get in the way of us empowering and equipping other people, right? And if you're not aware, listeners, of StrengthsFinder 2.0, it is an excellent tool. You can get it on Amazon, any bookstore right now. There's an assessment attached to the book. It's not even a book you need to read. It's a resource book, but you want to get the assessment. When Steve and I, after years of not working together and thinking we knew each other relationally, started working together, I told Steve, before I start working with you, we're going to do StrengthsFinder because I'm not who you think I am. So he's like, no, you're just like me. And I'm like, no, we are nothing alike. And StrengthsFinder showed that. And when Steve saw the results, he's like, who are you? He was, you know, because Steve's top five were activator, strategic, achiever, connectedness, and command. My top five were includer, connectedness, ideation, intellection, restorative, and we're nothing alike. Steve's a go-getter, and I'm a let's get people on board. And Scott, you sent yours in, and your top five were competitiveness, focus, significance, arranger, and responsibility. Talk to us about yourself for a little bit there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in its worst case, if you think about those five strengths, it's I'm highly competitive, I'm very focused, bring me your problems, I'll arrange them for you, I'm very responsible, so I won't let you down, I'll take it very seriously, and I'm very competitive, so I'm going to make sure, you know, I get you the best solution no matter how long it takes.
Right.
And, you know, Zach, you hit the nail on the head. Those things can be great strengths, but they can be great weaknesses as well as taken to extremes, especially in positions of senior leadership where I can find myself in a position very quickly that I run over people. And I have to be mindful of that. I think the best thing that I've done with my people, in addition to just kind of sharing those strengths or what could be weaknesses, is really tell them, give me permission to push you around a little bit and talk about ideas and challenge you on occasion, and I'll give you permission to tell me to back off.
What a great technique.
Or tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah, what a great technique.
Because people need to know I'm going to voice perspectives on occasion, but I don't want to own the solution, and I don't want to, you know, I do it now not to try to create the solution for the individual, but just to try to have dialogue so that they can create the solution and take whatever pieces of info that I offer that might be of value, but I want them to own the solution.
So I was just going to ask you a question, but I think you answered it before I asked you. It sounds like one of the tools or techniques that you've developed to manage yourself in a direction of a leader that creates, you know, an empowered workforce, an empowered group of leaders as a CEO, is you actually tell them, you know, right up front, you know, this is my nature. I'm probably gonna want to solve the problem. But guys, I don't want to own the solution. I want this to be your solution. And just by laying that on the table and bringing it out in the open and giving them the permission to challenge you with the outcome and the goal and the end in mind of, you know, wanting them to own the solution and not you, it sounds like it helps you hold back some of your tendencies to want to run the show. Is that what you're doing?
It absolutely does. I mean, and, you know, probably 7 or 8 years ago when I was working with you, one of the tools that you used at the time was kind of a 360 feedback tool. And what we did at the time is we took it a step further, and I've done that with this organization as well. We sat down, we basically said, here's everything I want you to know about me. Some of what you shared, some of which was self-assessment, you lay that out on a table, you make sure that you say to people, number one, I appreciate that feedback. Number two, I heard it. Number three, here are some things that I'm going to do, you know, here are some things you told me to do more of, and I'm going to try to do those things more. And here are some things you told me to do less of, and I get those and I understand that, and help me with that. But, you know, thank you for that feedback. I'm going to be very open and honest about it and help make me a better leader. And, you know, we modeled that behavior, and that's a behavior now that you know probably goes down 40 or 50 leaders deep in our organization.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know with the more of less of process and more of less of conversations, once you can use the data tools to identify very clearly what strengths and weaknesses are, and you can have open dialogue with people and then have the conversation that you've just defined of, okay, this is the way you're going to find me, this is the way I typically am. Tell me what I can do more of, what I can do less of, in order to equip and empower you and not smother you with my strengths or weaknesses. You'll be happy to know, Scott, that we have a tool now that actually measures how effective a leader is in deploying that more of less of process, and provides, you know, a data assessment. Because a lot of times, it's so easy for us as leaders, especially if you're competitive and you're a driver and you're an activator, kind of like we are, to, you know, get lost in our own stuff and stop hearing, stop listening, you know, maybe not stop caring, but sometimes it feels to others like we have stopped.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Great input. So, Scott, tell us, you know, you've done a wonderful job of describing, you know, your vision for an ideal culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement. Tell us about where have you seen, you know, for yourself or others, your organizations or others you work with, where have you seen the process start to deteriorate, or what are some of the weaknesses or, you know, trouble signs people need to look for?
As they're implementing a change in culture and dealing with those type of things?
Yeah, I mean, where does it fall off the tracks?
Well, you know, here's a couple places that I would look for. Number one, it has to be genuine. I've seen, you know, in particular, senior leaders try to fake their way through it. But there really has to be a genuine transformation. I mean, Steve, you talked about your wife's reaction. You know, live that stuff out. I started taking some of the tools years ago that you had shared, and I took them home, and I started, you know, behaving differently to my wife and everything else. And she said, "Hey, that stuff may work at work, but don't you dare try it here at home."
Good for her.
And I think what she was saying is, your MO is you're not quite this affirming at home and everything else. I see a change, and I'm not sure it's genuine.
Yeah, yeah. Stop trying to fake it till you make it. Make it, and then live it.
Yeah, and you know, I would swear to this day it was genuine. She would swear to this day it's manipulative. But, you know, irrespective, I think you've got to be genuine. You know, things like servant leadership and humility is part of what we ask for in leaders. It has to be genuine. You know, and when we first started talking about those things within this culture, the executives had underground parking for their cars, which is a big deal in Minnesota. They had company cars. We don't have underground parking for executives. We have underground parking for employees of the month. You know, and that stopped day one. We don't have company cars anymore. You know, there aren't any executive perks.
Yeah.
And you can't have an organization that talks about humility and servant leadership but has a different set of expectations and perks for senior leaders. So that's certainly one way that can break down.
Yeah, and it's so simple. I mean, just, you know, and folks who don't get the genuineness of, you know, the genuineness part of what you're saying, it's so easy to hear, oh, good, I got a great idea. We're going to change the parking, you know, policy in the company, and then we're going to have an empowered culture, and we're going to be able to be best in the industry like Scott and his team are, just the opposite of what you just said. You know, you'd probably get better results by being more genuine with who you are and keeping your parking policy the same until you become the kind of leader and the kind of person who sees the value of changing the parking policy because
right.
it's the right thing to do and the best thing to do instead of, you know, a tactic or a tool to manipulate people into higher performance that is not real.
Yeah, until you want to actually serve your people.
Yeah.
You know?
Guys, I think another area where that breaks down a little bit is in times of crisis. And I'll share one time of crisis. I mean, the deep recession of 2008-2009 hit the trucking industry very hard. We found our volumes went down about 15%. Prices went down 7 or 8%. And we were forced to do a number of things kind of to survive. One of those is we had to ask people for reductions in pay. And the way we did it, you know, ideally, what people would have liked is, Scott, you just put out the memo, let everybody know, and that's the way it would have been done in the past. I would have done 100% of the communication. This time, what we, in essence, said was, okay, the CEO is going to take a 15% pay cut. His
wow.
senior leaders are going to take a 10. The mid-level people are going to take a 7, and the entry-level people are going to take a 3 to 5. But in an empowered organization, our frontline leaders, for example, for our 2,000 drivers, said, we want to deliver the message ourselves to the drivers. We don't want to read about it or have you leave it on voicemail. We want to do that. And what you saw at 7 in the morning is people approached those first calls with a lot of trepidation,
yeah.
you know, and a lot of fear. And by 8:30 in the morning, you could see a growing level of confidence. The drivers didn't necessarily like the message, but they appreciated it being delivered by their leader and him standing up or her standing up and delivering it in person, or taking 10 or 15 minutes and doing it on the phone. And by 6, 7 o'clock at night, people were working 13, 14-hour days to deliver that message personally. In a lot of those young leaders' days, that was the best day of their leadership career, because what they found was, we can take a tough message, we can deliver it, with excellence, and people will respect the fact that we delivered that tough message, even if they didn't like the result. And that, to me, was a great example of a transformation from a top-down leadership to an empowered organization that said, hey, this is tough news, let me deliver it, because I can do it better than you can.
What an amazing example.
Amazing.
We got to head to a commercial, guys. All right, listeners, Biz Culture Matters, Clay 1180. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
So listeners, we're talking with Scott Arvis, CEO of Transport America, about an amazing story of a turnaround in a culture, a turnaround in a business that grew from top down and bleeding to bottom up and high performance, selected as best in the industry by their peer group. You know, what an amazing success story. But what's more amazing are these nuggets and tidbits of leadership insights and ideas that Scott is giving us. And what we, you know, as culture guys, we always want to caution folks against the, you know, okay, grab the bright idea of the month and go implement it. Okay, Scott just told us that we came up with this concept of, you know, it's tough times, so, you know, the CEO is going to take a 15% pay cut, and then everybody down the rank is going to take a pay cut, and we're all going to do this together and survive. Which, you know, is nothing new. It's happened before, but the transparency of the way the message was delivered, the care, the communication, the fact that, you know, drivers in his organization wanted to go deliver the message themselves, and it was their idea to do that, not the boss telling them to do that, you know, says it all. So, Scott, you know, as we transition more into this subject of employee engagement, you know, Gallup now tells us, you know, Gallup gave us the Strength Finder, which is a tremendous tool for understanding each other's point of views and strengths and, you know, weaknesses and how we can fit together. But same group of data-driven professionals are telling us now that 71% of our workforce in North America, United States specifically, are now disengaged in their jobs. We got people going to work every day that are there just to get a paycheck and get out of there as fast as they can. And it sounds like that's not the case at Transport America. What have, you know, other than just doing engagement surveys that every firm that's proactive these days does, what have you guys done to make engagement real with your leaders? I mean, how in the world can you get, you know, get it to happen where it's non-manipulative and real and transparent, and truck drivers come to you and say, boss, we want to deliver this message, instead of waiting for you to tell them what to do and to do it for them on painful messages like you just described? What did you do?
Well, I think, you know, I think it really kind of ties back to an engaged culture that focuses on driving decision down to the lowest level and asking people and you know, watching people enjoy the success that they get and the satisfaction that they get from that. I mean, so many times I think what we're talking about with dissatisfied employees is what we talked about earlier in the broadcast of employees that have sought out a perch on the sidelines watching the senior leaders play the game while they sit back and critique. If you've got an organization of empowered individuals, if you're driving decision-making down to the lowest level, it's hard not to be engaged in that process, because ultimately you'll stand out like a sore thumb in that culture if that's not a culture that appeals to you. And that's not a culture that appeals to everybody. Some people do like just the comfort of sitting home or sitting on the sidelines while they're at work, and you know, their satisfaction happens at work. Or, I'm sorry, it doesn't happen at work. It happens at home or coaching a sports team. We want it to happen at work as well. And so I think it's just creating that culture where every job's important and, you know, every role's important, and we're asking people to get in the game. And it's hard when you're playing the game not to be excited. And it's hard to check out if you're truly playing the game.
Yeah, so Scott, I just heard you say that watching people enjoy the success of making and implementing their own decisions is a key to leading engagement. What happens if you're a leader who learns this from you, who's an expert, who's accomplished this and done it, and now in a, you know, an acquisition mode and growing the business by, you know, taking over other firms who don't have the culture that you do? What happens if you hear that, you try to implement it, and nobody wants to make a decision when you tell them, okay, guys, you know, your turn to make decisions? What do you do?
Well, I think ultimately that's, you know, certainly the toughest part of what we do is, you know, we made an acquisition, as Steve mentioned, a couple of years ago, about a $140 million company, which was for a company that was $270 million at the time, was a huge deal. And what you found is people saluted and said, yes, we hear what you're saying and we want to do it, but not everybody wanted to do it. And
they just acted like it.
Yeah, you know, or they said, okay, this is, you know, this is the culture of the organization, but we don't understand the picture of it. So, you know, part of it is just modeling that behavior, Steve. Part of it is bringing in tools and showing people what it looks like and giving them the time and the tools. Part of it is, if, especially in cases of senior leadership, if they're working against that agenda, in a few cases, we had to move people out of the organization that just would rather lead with an iron fist and really what weren't or didn't buy into the, you know, the thought of hiring great people and empowering them. So it was a little bit of each. But what I will tell you is most people, when they see the benefits and they see the pictures of what that culture looked like, you know, employees, associates want to be part of not only a winning, but winning the right way. So, you know, they want to participate in the what, getting the results, but they also are very interested in how you do it. And I think there is a right way to do it, and people get excited when they see that right way.
So it's so much more than just telling them. It's about all of the support activities and tools and processes and systems and follow-up activities and actions, I hear you saying, that makes the difference between talking about it and actually getting it done.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Scott, put your coaches on here for a second. And if you were going to, you know, pass out, you know, some nuggets of wisdom and advice, other than what you've already shared with our listeners, you know, to leaders who want to have the success that you've had, you know, big turnaround story, going from top down and bleeding to bottom up empowerment, engagement, and, you know, recognized as best in the industry, best in class. If you're going to boil it down to a handful of nuggets of wisdom or advice that you could pass out, what would they be?
Steve, it might be helpful. I asked a consultant who's worked with us for a number of years that question a couple of weeks ago. I said, you've been working with us for 3 years. Tell me about the culture. Tell me about the organization. And what he said was, number one, you're still a work in progress. But what I see, number two, is every day I see people trying really hard. They're making errors, but the errors are because they're trying hard and they're trying to get better. It's not because they're covering up because they're sloppy or lazy or didn't get their job or are fearful. So they're in the game and they're trying hard. You know, the third thing he pointed out is, I see people working problems and they're polite, they're thoughtful, they're not bullying, you know, they're not pushing their idea, but they value other perspectives. And the team is about getting the best answer, not getting their answer. And as a highly competitive individual, sometimes I try to push for my answer. You know, I really appreciate that in the organization. You know, he said, I see an openness for the organization to try to get better. They're not happy with the status quo. They're coming to work and they're trying to get better every day. And I see a culture that doesn't stifle that progress. So they don't feel like they've got to protect the status quo. You know, they can go test new things and they can try new things and they can make mistakes and they can learn from those mistakes. So in addition to what we talked about, I thought that was a valuable perspective from an outsider kind of coming in and looking at our culture.
Well, I mean, such a key of, you know, the culture where, you know, a lot of people work hard. You know, my favorite Abraham Lincoln quote is, if somebody gave me 8 hours to chop a pile of wood, I'd spend 6 hours sharpening the axe. And, you know, we live in a society, in a country, in a global economy where people are spending 12 to 16 hours a day chopping wood and never sharpen the axe. And what I hear you saying is that you've put enough effort and energy into developing a culture where, you know, people are more about working hard to improve than they are working hard to just chop wood, chop wood, chop wood, and protect the status quo, which is very significant and has to be a huge part of the success that you guys have enjoyed.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I think for your listeners, especially those leading smaller, medium companies, you know, sometimes culture is the greatest thing that you have to offer versus the big guy. I mean, you know, my guess is the majority of your listeners have never heard of Transport America. You know, we're probably the 20th largest trucking company, but there are some much, much larger than us, than ours. But, you know, so we can't offer come to the biggest company. We can't offer the prestige of working for, a name brand. But what we can offer is, man, we can create a great culture. We can give you opportunities well before you'd get them as part of a large company. You can come to work and you can make a difference every day. You can be empowered. You know, you'll be able to make a difference quicker. And you'll look to your left and your right and you'll see people that are highly enthused to come to work. And to me, you know, if I'm running a smaller, medium company, that to me is the greatest differentiator I have. Back when I worked for the very large company, Schneider National, that I worked for, I ran a small division. And that was, you know, I ran a $40 million division as part of a $4 billion company. And the only reason people would come to work for this little $40 million company was we created a better culture within that larger culture.
Yeah.
And
now the industry's recognizing it.
Yeah.
We're running out of time, guys, but Scott thank you.
Yeah, Scott, your feedback was awesome. We got to have you back on the show because we're running out of time, and I know you've got a whole lot more to share because not only are you talking about it, you've done it and you've proven it, and you're the kind of guy that makes a difference in people's futures. Thank you, Scott.
All right, everybody. That's been
much.
You're welcome. Thank you. That's been Scott Arvis, CEO of Transport in America. We'll look forward to having him back on the show. You've been listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. Let's have a dialogue, everybody. Ask the experts at excellentcultures.com. See you next week.